Comcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect this afternoon. We are with Paul Gessing. He is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. The Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan research institute dedicated to increasing liberty and prosperity for all New Mexico citizens. They do this by informing New Mexicans of the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. Paul, welcome into ABQ Connect.
Good to be here, Jim.
Well, as always, you've been doing the marathon. You've been 3 weeks in the legislative session. You guys end on Thursday of this week, so just a few more days to go.
Yeah, it can't come soon enough for myself and for a variety of folks who are watching what's going on in Santa Fe. And, there's been a lot. It hasn't been quite the session we had last year, which was a 60-day session. But a lot of big issues have been discussed, and some bills have been passed, a lot of them not to our liking, in Santa Fe.
Well, Paul, I want to start first by letting everybody know that you have a resource, which is your website. That is riograndefoundation.org. And the very first banner that you can click on is a banner that says everything you need to know about the New Mexico's 54th legislative session. Tell us about your website.
Yeah, it's the place where people can go to find out more about what the Rio Grande Foundation is researching and writing about and discussing in terms of New Mexico's public policy issues. There's been a lot going on, mostly in Santa Fe, and you can access the Freedom Index right there, which is our primary tool for looking at what is happening in Santa Fe. We take every bill in the session that has an impact on your personal liberty, whether it's your pocketbook, whether it's your ability to own a gun, whether it's something that you want to do as a personal liberty. And we rate those bills from -8 to +8, -8 being the least positive, the worst bills, +8 being the best of the best. And then we assign scores to your representatives and state senators, and those are bills that are voted on the floor. So it is a quick caveat that we don't have access to committee votes. That's something that's on the table for this session, is to have a repository for where those bills are voted on in committee, and you can find out how your legislators are voting then. Sometimes, you might read the Albuquerque Journal, and they have a story that says the vote was 8-2. Sometimes you won't even know who the 8 were and the 2 were. All we have access to that's published on a consistent basis is floor votes. So if a bill is on the floor or has moved through the floor process, you will see it tracked in our Freedom Index. And we try to give people information about how their legislators are voting in Santa Fe on issues that impact them in their daily lives.
I want to encourage everybody to go to riograndefoundation.org. I want to spell that for you, R-I-O-G-R-A-N-D-E, foundation, foundation.org. Lots of resources to find out what's going on. Paul, you are really, the little bit I know you've been interviewing with us here for about 6 or 8 months, you're a budget guy. And I think one of the reasons you seem a little bit discouraged is because we still don't have a budget, and we only have 4 days left.
Yeah, I'm a budget guy and care about those dollars and cents. Of course, we also want to reform New Mexico's economy. We're not big believers that spending more money in the government is going to lead to improvements in our day-to-day lives, education system, et cetera, et cetera. I do hope that there is an agreement between the House and Senate. Definitely, there's philosophical differences. The House tends to be a little bit more progressive. They tend to like to spend even more money, whereas the Senate is a little more on the restrained side. They're both controlled by Democrats, but they have those different philosophies. Folks like John Arthur Smith, Senate Finance Committee Chairman, he has been riding herd, if you will, on the folks there in the legislature. The House did pass their budget. Even the House did not give the governor her free college as she had planned to have that, you know, before the session. She was talking about we're going to pay for free college. Mm-hmm. We can talk a little bit about how that is moving or not moving through the process. But, it's going to be interesting. I wouldn't be stunned to see a special session. I'm sure they don't want to do that. Again, you know, the Republicans were moving into an election year, and if they require a special session in an election year, the Republicans will be the first one in line saying, you have all the power. You have the governor, you have the Senate, you have the House, and you still can't come up with a budget. There'll be a lot of sniping and criticism, and I think justifiably so, if the Democrats who control the legislative processes up there can't get a budget done. But we'll see. They still got time. They're going to be working some long hours. They already were over this past weekend. Mm-hmm. I was logging on just to see how things were going. Committees were in hearings on Saturday and Sunday, and floor votes were happening. A lot is going on right now. It's going very quickly.
Well, and I want to stop here and say, you know, again, we need to thank our legislatures and legislators and state senators who they're really largely volunteering. They get a little stipend for some food, maybe a hotel room, but they really don't get paid, one of the few states in the country. So though we may disagree with a lot of things that people are saying, they are up there, they're serving, they're doing, I think, intentionally their best job. And all we want to do is encourage people to look, you know, let's get away from the love of money. Let's get away from, you know, partisan politics, and let's work together. And one of the things that you mentioned, Paul, in one of our last meetings is that there is quite a bit of agreement on this pension reform, this PERA, the Public Employees Retirement Fund. Tell us how that's progressing.
Yeah, and before I get into the pension reform, I just want to echo your sentiment about the volunteer legislator, kind of that motif up there. And if you do have time to go up to the roundhouse, you can directly interact with your legislators and talk to people. It's a very accessible group. They are not protected, if you will, by large number of staff that you have to go through in order to get a meeting or have a conversation with them. You can go to Santa Fe, and especially if you know a little bit, you know who your legislators are, and you can look for them and find them and try to get in touch with them. If you're patient, you can get in touch with your legislators directly. And of course, you do have to get up to Santa Fe, and that can be a challenge and a lot of time on your part. But in terms of the pension issue, this is one of the potential bright lights for actual free market policy reform. These pension programs, now we have two of them in the state of New Mexico. We have PERA, which is for, you know, government employees who are not in the education system. Then we have the ERB, which is for government employees who are in the education system. Of course, these are state and local workers. Public employees who are in the education system, it's readily apparent. And you can pretty much assume that everybody else is in PERA. PERA is the one that is being considered for reform. It's $6+ billion in the red. It's unfunded liabilities are growing because over time, the ability for investment advisors to make enough money it's not there. And part of that is because we've seen a big shift in our investments, you know, in the last 20, 30 years as these pension programs have become less viable. It used to be that you would get, you know, 8, 9, 10% interest rates. Now you've got to invest in stock market and you've got to gain a return that way. And that's a lot trickier for these programs. But there's a bipartisan reform. It's called SB 72. As we have this conversation, it has passed the Senate and it is hopefully going to be voted on the floor of the House of Representatives in the next day or two. It's a bipartisan deal, though.
Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with us, giving us a recap on the New Mexico legislative session. We've had a number of guests on the air, Vince Torres. We've had Rhiannon Samuel with Viante in New Mexico. And now Paul, all very gracious to give us their time. There's a ton of stuff going on. And when we come back, we're going to talk about SB 72 and how you might be able to track that through Paul's website. So stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, is in studio with us. The Rio Grande Foundation conducts research and advocates reforms to promote public participation in government, address the role of money in politics, and encourage integrity, accountability, and transparency in government. And I want to talk about the website one more time. Paul just talked about legislation, Senate Bill 72, which is under consideration now, I'm assuming, and how people can use your website to track that and what's going on with it.
Yeah. So if you go to the Freedom Index, which is the legislative tracking tool, the best way to look at that is going through individual legislators. You can find the list of legislators. They've got pictures there. You can find out who your legislator is based on the district that you live in. You might need to go to the legislature's website in order, if you have no idea who your legislators are, but hopefully you can easily come to understand who your legislators are. So you're going to have one House member and one state senator, and you can go through the system and find out and then look at how they voted. Each bill is there. SB 72 is the pension bill, and it'll say right next to the legislator's name and all their information on how they vote on all the other issues, whether they voted for or against that, and how many points that the Rio Grande Foundation's assigned to that particular bill. And it's a very simple process, and then you have a score available for the individual legislators who either have a positive score in green or a negative score if they've tended to vote for bigger government and less personal freedom. And, we've done this now for 5-6 years, so you can go back and find previous years if you're concerned with your legislators' outcomes and that you think they're voting for bigger government pretty consistently. Well, you can go back and find not just this session, because sometimes the issues voted on may not be as in line with that legislator's views, or there may be some kind of political considerations going on. But if you have a consistent track record over the years of voting against freedom year in and year out, especially in a 60-day session like last year, it's a pretty good indicator of where that legislator's philosophy is. Sometimes people do things for different reasons, and politics is an important part of that. Votes are taken or not taken that will impact their freedom index. And folks, if you follow the political process, whether it's here in New Mexico or in Washington D.C., you'll know that sometimes things happen for mysterious reasons that aren't readily apparent. But if people do it year in and year out, it's a pretty good indicator of where they stand overall philosophically.
And if you're listening and you'd like to go to the New Mexico Legislature's website, go to nmlegis.gov, and there you can click on legislators. Mm-hmm. It's across the banner, across the top. There's home legislators, legislation, committees, publications, what's happening, all kinds of information, but you really want to find out who your representatives are, and you can do that by entering in your address, and they'll tell you exactly who your representatives are. They give you phone numbers, email addresses, and so forth. And as Paul has already stated, you've got several days now to even actually go up to Santa Fe and maybe just see what's going on, because very, very few votes when it comes to these elected officials in their various districts, very few votes decide who's up there in Santa Fe.
Yeah. The districts are, of course, smaller for House of Representatives. You have more senators, fewer senators, more large districts for senators. It's just like Washington. You know, you don't have entire states here for the state legislature. whereas you know, U.S. Senators Heinrich and Udall, they represent all of New Mexico. But state senators do have bigger districts than House members. They're also elected for longer terms. In the U.S. Senate, it's 6 years. In the New Mexico Senate, it's 4 years for senators and 2 years for the House, which means that every New Mexico legislator, all 112 of them, will be up in 2020 in November. So obviously we have a presidential election that's critical, but the legislature and what happens with it and its future. And obviously all the bills, all the discussion happening right now is critical, but something else is redistricting. Every 10 years, they have a census. You figure out where populations are growing, where they're shrinking, and you redraw lines on one hand, theoretically, to accommodate those population shifts, but on the other, to reflect the political dynamics both on the ground. So is New Mexico seeing an influx of registered Republicans, Democrats, independents, and then the legislators in what has become, and it's gone to the U.S. Supreme Court, a very partisan process. They redistrict and gerrymander, an old term, if you know it, goes back to the founding of the country. There was a legislator or a congressman, I forget his last name, but it, Elbridge Gerry, that's it. He was from Massachusetts, and they made a district that looked like kind of a salamander for, for him, and it became gerrymander. And that's the term that is applied to this partisan process of drawing up these district lines. And because, again, the Democrats control everything in Santa Fe, they could really make it hard for, oh, the Republicans to ever get a U.S. member of Congress. Mm-hmm. Senate, that's set in stone, that's the state boundaries. But Congress and legislative seats, New Mexico Senate seats, you have other things like the PRC districts. Now, PRC could be reformed beyond voting this time around. That's one of the bills up there is to change the PRC from an elected body with districts to appointed by the governor. But all of those are impacted by redistricting, which will happen after this 2020.
Paul, I'm frequently talking with people about government, and they're listening to the show, and they're sending me emails and so forth. And a lot of people will use the word democracy, and they will say, we live in a democracy. And I really know this is simple, but I think a lot of people don't know this. We don't actually live in a democracy. We live in a republic.
Right.
And we have representative government, because in a true democracy, the majority wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in a republic, the reason we have representatives in Congress and we have senators and we have the same thing at the state level is because then the individual is represented and has a voice. And it's not just the overwhelming majority. But a lot of the things you've just described, the gerrymandering and some of the advantages that both parties try to take advantage of, they're all trying to gain that numerical advantage, if you will, in terms of voters. And I think what we're trying to do at ABQ Connect is we're trying to have guests like you to mm-hmm. come on and give people resources so that they can look at what's actually going on, get the information right now, and make some decisions about how they want to vote. And not all of this is a moral or some kind of spiritual decision. A lot of it is personal preference and how you want to treat money. But on the other hand, a lot of this for our faith community really is based. For example, a lot of people have opposed in the faith community the late-term abortion
mm-hmm.
And
that really didn't come up this session.
And many people were praying really hard about that. And, you know, maybe the governor has, you know, backed off on that. But you can never, you know, most people don't realize this, but today, it is actually legal in New Mexico to do a late-term abortion. You can literally kill a baby as long as it hasn't been born at any point before birth.
Mm-hmm.
And we've become a state where a lot of people are coming to this state just have those types of pregnancies terminated, which we feel is, you know, the people in the faith community, in Christian community are not, they're opposing that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely pro-life. And there's people all the way, you know, there's a lot of people that have all kinds of discussion that they want to have about abortion overall. There's people that want to talk about only in the case of rape or incest. And there's all kinds of considerations. So what we want to do is give people the information, tell them what our legislators, our leadership is working on here, both in the state, and we appreciate you telling us what you've got. Now, Paul, I understand that.
Let me jump in there. Made two very, very big points. Let me talk about democracy first and foremost. So in ancient Greece, where democracy, the concept kind of came from, everyone would meet, you know, once a month or whatever in the town square in these little Greek city-states, and they would literally put every question up to a vote of the people. Now, you had to be probably a male. I don't know enough about ancient Greece, but 18 years old, perhaps a property owner, although I'm not entirely sure on that history. The point is that every decision in the community was made by a vote. Now, as soon as you start electing people, you move away from democracy towards more of a Republican style. So it's like a continuum. We live in a more Republican democracy, I would say, not just because we elect our officials, but we elect senators who U.S. senators represent vastly different numbers of people. California with, I think 45 million people or some, you know, insane number. We have 2 million in New Mexico, yet each state has two U.S. senators. So that is anti-democratic on its face, right there. Of course, the Electoral College, which has been very controversial. New Mexico last year passed a law that was signed by the governor to essentially dedicate New Mexico's votes under the Electoral College to whoever won the popular vote. That's, you know, whether you like the Electoral College or not, it really makes New Mexico relevant if that becomes law. It's not, it has to go through a process and a compact in the federal government, whether it actually becomes the law. But it would totally eliminate New Mexico from presidential elections. Another anti-democratic feature, well, series of them, is the Bill of Rights. People don't think of the First Amendment. Well, the First Amendment, you don't have to protect free speech if it's popular speech. You have to protect unpopular speech, which inherently is anti-democratic. Second Amendment, inherently anti-democratic because you're allowing the minority to defend themselves physically against the influence of the majority. The Fourth Amendment, searches and seizures, personal effects, those kinds of things. They're all of our amendments, well, not all of them, but certainly in the Bill of Rights, of a lot of those amendments are directly geared towards minority rights. And then on the abortion issue, real quickly, you know, it's not our organization's focus, but the idea that the Supreme Court of the United States is going to overturn Roe versus Wade and that we have to be passing laws now to preempt the U.S. Supreme Court potentially passing that law. It just shows you where our political mind is right now. There is a conservative, quote unquote, majority of 5-4 on the U.S. Supreme Court. Yes, there could be an additional justice after the election, depending on its outcome. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health is not well. I suspect, this is my personal, I don't think that we're going to see a wholesale overturning of Roe v. Wade. There might be some dialing back to recognize new science that's been uncovered and new evidence that we have that younger and younger babies can be viable, you know, at 20 weeks and whatnot. But I just, putting my policy, my political hat on, I don't see a wholesale repeal of Roe versus Wade. Even if they did, it would then be up to the states.
Right, right.
Which people often assume, well, if they repeal Roe v. Wade, that means that abortion is illegal. Well, the fact is that each state is going to be able to make their own policies.
We have a lot more with Paul Gessing this afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be back after we thank a couple of our commercial sponsors.
Most of us wake up to pain, fatigue, and just feeling sick. Much of this can be greatly helped. Learn to lose weight, fight inflammation, pain, fatigue, and become overall healthier. No judgment, just help. It's all about biblical nutrition and health. Join us for a free class with Pastor Scott Tom. It starts soon. You must register online at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. We continue our conversation with Paul Gessing. Paul is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. And Paul, I understand you've got kids that are off of school today and you've left them at home with mom.
You got it, yeah. she is one of the senior citizens that did move here. She grew up in Albuquerque, went to St. Pius High School, moved off to Cincinnati, Ohio. She was going to be a nun in the Catholic Church. So Sisters of Charity moved her to Cincinnati, Ohio. And that's where I grew up. She obviously did not continue with being a nun. And that's a whole long story. But
I bet you she is totally blessed just to have those grandchildren and loving on them today.
Yep, she enjoys her time with them. And it's a blessing to have her able to watch those kids and interact with them and instill some of her values with them.
Well, and Paul, I bring that up really because extended family in New Mexico has been a long tradition. A lot of our Hispanic families have, you know, 3-4 generations all together living next to each other or close. And a lot of people in the state have kind of adapted that whole concept because they see how effective it is in caring for and taking care of families. And it's an amazing thing. But as I look at our attractiveness to senior citizens in this state, you brought up that there might be a possibility that we could see our state stop taxing Social Security benefits, and that looks like that's not going to happen.
Yeah, every person, senior citizen or otherwise, has different priorities. Some of them want to be with family and friends and stay tight with them, regardless of the tax situation. So, you know, just because you enact a given policy doesn't mean you're necessarily going to see a tremendous influx or outflow of people. But we at the Rio Grande Foundation have been, very critical of the legislature and the governor and the overspending. I think it's fair to say that everyone acknowledges has happened in Santa Fe. When Governor Martinez left, we had a $6.3 billion general fund budget. After this session, depending on, you know, where things line up with the budget, we're looking at $7.8 billion. And we felt that it's very important for the taxpayers of New Mexico to get some of that back, some kind of tax relief in one form or another. Now, gross receipts tax is the tax that we felt needed to be addressed. It's very anti-entrepreneurial. It hurts businesses. It taxes businesses multiple times on the same production, same product. Really a harmful tax needs to be addressed. That was floated by Speaker Brian Egolf before the session, but no serious effort was undertaken on the gross receipts tax. And that has more to do with young people, job producers, people employed. And we are losing our young people in New Mexico to other states, specifically surrounding states. Some of the fastest growing states in the entire country are right around us. Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Texas. Those are basically the top 4 or 5 growth states outside of Florida. Florida is one of the other states that's growing really fast. So that's kind of a policy, a road that was not taken before the session. But there was a more serious effort, more bipartisan effort to address Social Security taxation. New Mexico consistently appears on lists of states that are unfriendly to retirees. Now, if you've got family and grandkids and whatnot, and that's your priority, well, then you may be willing to pay the tax burden associated with being here in New Mexico to come here regardless. But there's a lot of folks who maybe their kids are adults and they're spread out all over the country and they want to make their decision based on amenities and weather. And they don't like 120 degree heat in the summer in Arizona and Phoenix. So they want to come here where it's much more pleasant. And maybe they like the Native American culture or the skiing or whatever it is. Well, unfortunately, because this session, there was no action taken on Social Security taxes. No changes were made, no cuts to the Social Security tax. There were multiple different proposals. Some of them would have raised the threshold so you could make more money and still not pay Social Security taxes, or eliminating Social Security taxation entirely. You get taxed by the state of New Mexico when you get checks on Social Security. Now, even today, there's a threshold. I think it's $17,000, pretty low. And a lot of people do have to pay taxes on their Social Security. So it's a form of double taxation. It's a way that people don't get to take their whole Social Security check and use it for their own benefit, for their own retirement. But New Mexico continues to tax the Social Security. It is something that was very unfortunate that unfortunately on a bipartisan basis, quite honestly, while Republicans have since rallied to say, we support eliminating Social Security taxes, the committee, the House Tax Committee, actually tabled it on a bipartisan basis. And it's something that I think if you are concerned about, whether you're legislators or Republican or Democrat, get in touch with them and say, hey, it's high time New Mexico eliminated or reduce the Social Security tax burden.
So when we're really talking to people that are retired, so if you're sitting down in front of a computer, you need to find out who your legislators are, and you need to send them an email and say, look, I'm retired in New Mexico. I paid X number of dollars in taxes last year on my Social Security. I would like not to do that.
Right.
And I would like to vote for people that are trying to make it easier and less expensive to retire in New Mexico, because we do love the weather and the mountains and the lakes and all of the wonderful things we have here.
And in addition, kind of a similar but side point is military pensions and military retirees. Mm. Now, New Mexico, we know we have a lot of folks who have served in the military stationed here, active service, active duty. Sandia, we have out in Clovis, we have White Sands, we have all of these different facilities. And I meant Kirtland, not Sandia, but same deal, basically. We have a lot of military installations and a lot of former retirees here in our state. But we can even attract more of those kinds of folks, very highly educated, capable self-starters, who often are young enough that they can go and start another business or do something productive with their lives and continue to pay taxes. So why are we chasing those kinds of folks out of state as well? And both of them need to be in that discussion, both groups. We have the funding available. We have the money right now. All they're doing is spending every last dime right now. We need to do something different, which is make New Mexico an economic magnet, not tax policies that repel people and prevent them from coming here.
We are talking with Paul Gessing. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. More with Paul right after these messages. Stay with us.
Mark Pardo Salon Spa invites you to experience ultimate relaxation in our award-winning environment. Find our new guest offer at markpardo.com and receive $15 toward any Salon Spa experience, including cut and style, conditioning treatments, color, texture and treatment, makeup and lashes, or relaxing spa services. Set your first appointment today at Mark Pardo Salon Spa. Call 298-2983 or at markpardo.com.
If you're currently paying a monthly electric bill, you already have the means to switch to solar. Local and employee-owned and operated New Mexico Solar Group, an authorized SunPower dealer, provides a free consultation explaining the advantages of solar power. Financing available, no down payment required. It's easy to harvest power from the sun and stop overpaying for electricity. Call New Mexico Solar Group at 505-357-1198. Online at nmsolargroup.com. That's nmsolargroup.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back in studio with Paul Gessing, and he's kind of coined a phrase called the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. Paul, what's that all about?
Yeah, it is an effort to limit taxation and government spending growth in the state of New Mexico. Now, Colorado has one of these on the books. It was adopted in 1992, And it's the most aggressive in terms of tax and spending limits in the entire country. Something on the order of 30, I think 32 states to be specific, have some kinds of limits on taxing and spending in the state. But Colorado, in 1992, adopted a provision that limits annual spending growth in the state to the combined rate of inflation and population growth. Those are obviously metrics by which government can or should grow, because if you have more population, you have more people consuming government services. If you have inflation, you have dollars that go less far, so you need that money to be made whole. Now, but that is essentially freezing the size of government. Colorado has amazing success since 1992. It's always been a little bit more prosperous, but since 1992, Colorado has really left New Mexico in the dust. And it's now a blue state, just like New Mexico. The average person, the average worker in New Mexico, well, Colorado makes $17,000 a year more than the average New Mexican. That's one indicator. Over the last decade, from 2010 to 2019, Colorado grew 12.67% in population. New Mexico grew 1.79%. And I would say that our weather is a whole lot better than Colorado's overall. Colorado has some beautiful mountains and scenery. We've got all that scenery, and we've got better weather than Colorado, I would say. So the point is that it's New Mexico's policies, it's New Mexico government that is keeping the economy down, keeping people out of our state who would otherwise come here and create jobs and economic opportunity. And you know, while tax reduction, like Social Security taxes, like military pension taxes, like gross receipts taxes, would definitely be one way to make New Mexico more friendly to those kind of businesses and jobs. Another way would be to limit government's growth and then see that money return to the taxpayers. And we got a bill, HJR 5. It unfortunately did not get a floor vote in the legislature. It did get a committee hearing. I was a witness for Rod Montoya, House of Representatives, a Republican who is the minority whip. He's the one that kind of has to ride herd on his group of Republicans there in the House. But he introduced the bill. We got a committee hearing, and they tabled it on partisan lines, unfortunately. So it's a concept, though, that I think needs to be really considered and explored, especially given the boom and bust cycle we have here in New Mexico with oil and gas. We see boom times like we have now, and then bust times. If we had the taxpayers' bill of rights, we wouldn't see government grow rapidly, double-digit gains, and then crash back when oil price or production goes down. So we really need to do something like this. But unfortunately, it's politicians like to spend money. I think we know that.
Well, I've seen a few news reports through the various television stations and on some radio programs here locally about what's called the red flag bill. And I've seen primarily news footage of the sheriff's departments around the state fighting with various legislative initiatives about limiting or being able to take away firearms for people that might be deemed to be dangerous. But, Paul, it's not that simple, is it?
Yeah, it would be great if there was a way to, what was that Tom Cruise movie, Minority Report, where they had the pre-crime and kind of the nodules that these kind of creatures could see into the future. And, you know, if we had that available to us, it would be, you know, at once both amazing and terrifying. But, the red flag bill was SB5. And it passed both houses, and I think the governor's already signed it. So that's one of the big things that's already happened in the New Mexico legislature. This was definitely a top priority of the governor. The theory is that you've got somebody who is behaving erratically and has guns and somehow is perceived to be a threat to somebody. Could be ex-girlfriend or boyfriend or neighbors or whatever it might be. And it, those folks get reported to the authorities, the police, and the police come by and, you know, somehow they talk to that person and they take the guns away from them.
And has that responsibility by through the bill been put on law enforcement?
Yes. Now, it has been specifically put on law enforcement. There was some other ways that that process would work under the original bill, but it's been amended, and it's now only law enforcement. Now, we have sheriffs across the state who have very clearly expressed that they're not interested in this. There's also been amended provisions put into the bill that create so you have something called sovereign immunity, which basically means that police officers in their course of their work cannot just be sued willy-nilly. And you understand that police officers are put in some tough situations where frequently they have to act very quickly. You can't just have anybody who doesn't like what a cop does coming and suing them. But this bill actually peels back on that sovereign immunity and says that officers who do not enforce this law, and it's kind of vague exactly what that means, but who don't enforce this can be sued under this law. Now, on one hand, I look at it, and I'm not an attorney, but I look at that language and I say, on one hand, this is an effort by the legislature to demand, to coerce recalcitrant law enforcement officials, especially in these, you know, sheriffs who don't want to be a part of this thing, to enforce the law. Okay, that's one way to read it. But you have to understand that some of the advocates, the biggest advocates, Senator Joe Cervantes, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, Damon Eli, one of the sponsors of the bill, and Cervantes is the one that put this provision in. Both of those are trial attorneys. Now, if you start creating new avenues for police officers to be sued, to have those lawsuits filed and successfully litigated, you're creating an entirely new area of law for trial attorneys to come in, charge their clients massive sums of money to go after these law enforcement officers and the agencies that ultimately
and
be held responsible.
The restitution is going to end up being paid by the government.
Right, the taxpayers, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there could be a double meaning to this provision in this law. One is we want to stop, you know, we want to force these law enforcement officials to do what we want them to do, even if we don't necessarily have that authority when it comes to the sheriffs. And the other is creating new avenues for lawsuits in the future.
You know, and it would be just great for folks to go into the RioGrandeFoundation.org and go into the Freedom Index, and you can take a look at SB 5 and kind of the history of how it tracked through the legislature.
Exactly, and you can find out exactly who voted for it. Offhand, I think we rated it a -7, which is pretty, you know, out of 8, that's a pretty serious negative piece of legislation. You know, it's really tough to get a -8 or a +8 in our index. But yeah, it is one of the most heavily rated, yes, -7. Extreme Risk Firearm Protection Order Act is the actual name. If you Google or if you look for red flag, it may not have that, especially in official documentation. You know, and that's kind of commonplace where the politicians come up with some very fancy arcane terminology where the colloquial name is much different.
You bet. Paul Gessing, our guest this afternoon on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, did you know that some 48 million Americans suffer from some type of hearing loss? At Sound Choice Hearing, we have over 25 years of experience in hearing aid fitting. At Sound Choice, we offer free hearing evaluations, and we allow you to try the latest hearing technology absolutely free with no obligation. With the technology we offer today, we can treat any type of hearing loss, and we can help you hear better even on your cell phone. So call Sound Choice Hearing for a free hearing test and consultation. information at 341-1300. That's 341-1300.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. Has God shown you that there are things in your life that need to be changed and fixed? Generally speaking, we all have these things in our lives in one shape or another. The difference is if we take care of them right away or not. In the automotive repair world, I've seen this over and over. Catastrophic failures due to people not fixing small issues with their vehicle right away. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, we take care of all your vehicle's repair and maintenance needs. We are ASC Master Certified and AAA approved. We are located in Rio Rancho on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. And we have free towing to our facility for repairs. Just ask for details. And with those things God is showing you that you need to change and fix, please don't put it off and let these small issues in your life become catastrophic failures. Jesus stands beside you ready to fix all that is broken in you if you will just simply ask him to do so. And he's already paid the price for the repair.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect. A lot of New Mexicans are out in the search for a great job. And what a lot of people don't know going on behind the scenes is there's been a pretty big fight between folks that want the state to have a right to work bill and then the union supporters, which are absolutely against it. Paul, what's going on with the union giveaway bill?
Yeah, SB 110 was the original number associated with a bill that had numerous provisions in it, giving new power and new authority to government employee labor unions. Now, quick step back. There are two types, basic types of unionized workplaces. There are government employees and government employee unions, and there are private sector employees and employee unions. In a Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision called Janus versus AFSCME, and AFSCME is probably the most well-known government employee union, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Mark Janus was a gentleman in Illinois who did not feel that this union represented him, that he should, as he was required to, and generations of public employees were required to pay the union. So money was taken out of their paycheck by the union before they even got a chance to spend it or saw it in their own paycheck. And the union has a variety of political causes that they stand behind. Often, and I know the NEA and some of the big teachers unions, which are also public employees, they prioritize abortion rights and expansion of abortion laws in a liberal direction. Gun rights, they typically are anti-gun. They've gotten into a vast array of policy areas. Anyway, Mark Janus thought this was a bad deal and went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And basically the thrust of the decision of the court was you as a public employee have the right to your paycheck, your hard-earned money. You shouldn't have to be forced under that state's law to pay union dues in order to fill the job that you're working in. Now, as you might imagine, the public employees, the unions, didn't care for this a great deal. And nothing was done last session about it. But in this session, SB 110 was designed to empower a variety of public employees unions. This doesn't address unions that UPS or FedEx or sure, the Teamsters or whoever else. It's strictly for government employees, which in New Mexico, because of our limited size private sector, especially the traditional manufacturing and those kinds of jobs, which are heavily unionized, government employees unions really call the shots in most of our state, in our state. So long story short, you have this original bill, SB 110, and one of the things was it would give all the employee information, no matter who worked for the government, to the unions, emails, personal addresses, phone numbers, all that stuff. Another was that in order to have a unionization election, you would no longer have a secret ballot. you know, like you go to the polls, you and I do, to vote for president or the legislature, it would be someone stop you in the hallway at your place of work and say, hey, you support the union, right? And they would just check a card called card check, and they would say, okay, well, you're down as being supportive of the union. A lot more easy to pressure people and really bully and intimidate them into being part of the union. Variety of other provisions in that, some of them really big, some of them not so big. So this is where it gets tricky and arcane. So I was there on a Monday night a couple of weeks ago when the bill was tabled. Tabled means killed. It's kind of a fancy way that they talk up in Santa Fe and in legislative bodies. Well, then, and we knew this was going to be a priority for the unions, and they have a lot of power. So they came back and got the bill resurrected. So now it's a zombie bill in the Senate. SB 110 got resurrected by the Judiciary Committee. Well, I made the term zombie bill up, but I think that's a fair assessment. Well, this bill, so the leadership, this is one of the reasons it's so important who controls the process. The leadership wants this legislation. So instead of putting it through the relevant committees, because this was going to be an expensive bill. Well, expensive bills should go to the Senate Finance Committee. Senate Finance Committee is controlled by John Arthur Smith and some more fiscally conservative folks. They specifically had avoided recommending the bill be heard by Finance Committee. Well, a Republican who was alert made a motion and got the bill to Finance Committee, to required to go through that committee. So they did not want that to happen. So there's these things called dummy bills. I know we're getting like way off the reservation here. But what will happen is that you'll have these bills that don't have any language in them, like what they do. They'll just be a number because they want to make sure that they have these available to them by the end of the session. And these bills, this dummy bill, HB 364, it's one of these bills. And so because they were so adamant about getting around finance, they introduced it into a dummy bill 364 in the House, which that version is now moving through the process. So we've got, you know, right now it's Monday and the session ends at noon on Thursday, and it is going to be a race to see if they, A, can get it through both houses, but B, they're going to be doing some arm twisting back behind the scenes dealing, especially in the Senate, to get those Democrats who supported sending it through finance to not do that and to get the bill so it can move through the process very quickly without any hangups.
Well, and Paul, you mentioned a couple of states surrounding us, Texas, Colorado, two for an example. I believe both of those are right-to-work states.
Colorado is actually not a right-to-work state. It's a little more complicated than that. I'd be happy to go into it maybe another time, but we are surrounded by right-to-work states minus Colorado, which further shows the power of the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights, I might add.
Mm. Well, and when you talk about right-to-work, that just simply means what you just described. You're not required to join a union. For example, if you want to be a teacher.
Exactly.
And where that exists, there are still unions.
Right.
But you have the freedom to join the union or not.
Exactly. And right to work, by the way, just, you know, the Supreme Court case, Janus versus AFSCME, applied only to government employees. New Mexico is still not a right to work state for private sector employees. And that Supreme Court case did not impact New Mexico. But Arizona, Utah, Oklahoma, and Texas are all right to work states. So you can join or not join the union as a precondition of employment. Simple as that in those states.
Paul, awesome. We got another segment left with you. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Do you have an old clunker or a good running vehicle? Donate to Joy Junction. It can help bring hope to the homeless. If it's in good condition, great. If not, no problem. Running not required. We'll take it. Just contact us and we'll take care of the rest, even towing. Just call 505-217-9586. Your vehicle donation will help us provide housing for Albuquerque's homeless families. Joy Junction, bringing hope to the homeless. Won't you help? Here's Joy Junction CEO, Alma Reynolds.
Joy Junction has been serving homeless families, men and women, for more than 33 years now. And it's a dream come true for our late founder, Jeremy Reynolds, to have a new additional space to give more dignity and privacy to those who come to our doors. But we need your help. Your generous donation means hope to somebody, and we are here to be that hope.
For more information, go to joyjunction.org. Be that hope. Go to joyjunction.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back with ABQ Connect. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. One more segment here with Paul Gessing. He is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan research institute dedicated to increasing liberty and prosperity for all New Mexicans. And the way they do that, really, is providing information to the public through their website, which is riograndefoundation.org. Paul's been here multiple times throughout the year. He was visiting with us before the session started, about 4 days left in the session. And, Paul, I think a lot of people are wondering if marijuana is going to be legalized this year.
The short answer is no. It moved very little, actually, in the legislature this session. And I just, looking at it beforehand, never thought that it had the kind of momentum that maybe the governor had hoped it had. It was really a very slow process in Santa Fe in terms of marijuana. Now, it's worth noting that marijuana legalization was introduced in the Senate. Basically, the idea, and I think it's a correct assumption, is that a lot of the more controversial issues, like marijuana legalization, they figured, let's go through the Senate first, which is the higher hurdle, the higher bar for a lot of these more liberal progressive policies. If we can get it through the Senate, then we can probably push it through the House. The red flag bill was one of those, and it did get through the Senate. The marijuana legalization was also one of those priorities, and that one is not going to happen this particular session. Now, with the budget situation out there, we talked earlier on in a different segment about the likelihood or the potential for lack of agreement on the budget. Would the governor decide to put marijuana legalization out in a special session as an issue to discuss? Perhaps, but I don't think the numbers are there, given that Republicans in this session, especially the Senate, where they had kind of expressed some interest and willingness to work with the Democrats on marijuana legalization, not all of them, but a handful of them had done that. And I just don't see, unless the Democrats are able to sweet talk, if you will, some of these Republicans back on board, I don't see anything happening. There's a number of socially conservative Democrats in the Senate that are not likely to go along with the marijuana legalization. And that's going to be something that's definitely brought forth in the 2020 election in November. You saw perhaps recent polling come out of the Albuquerque Journal saying that statewide 60% support marijuana legalization. I think that's an accurate number. Mm-hmm. I do. I forget the exact opposite, what it was, 25-30%. With the usual, 10 or so percent undecided. I think if you take that number and boil it down to just Albuquerque, it's probably even a higher number. And you have some Republicans who are in some vulnerable districts here, or some open districts where Republican state senators previously occupied. And, the Democrats, Michelle Lujan Grisham, the governor, are banking, I think, on using that issue in some election materials and campaigns. The question is, when it comes to who actually votes and what your priorities are, is marijuana legalization going to be enough for some of these people to reject Republicans in these Senate seats, or are they going to have other priorities like red flag bill, like abortion, like the spending and the economy and those kinds of things? So we shall see.
We shall see. Paul, you have some purpose in holding government officials accountable. So we're going to switch down to the city council in Albuquerque from the New Mexico legislature. And we've just had a city councilor where some accounting's been done on a trip that she took and spent a lot of money. Tell us about that.
Yeah, a while back, we sat down with Channel 7 KOAT and talked to them. They brought us some information that they'd actually uncovered about City Councilor Clarissa Pena. So she's an Albuquerque councilor, and she had taken a trip via train from Albuquerque for theoretically some conferences and trips to meetings in New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and stayed in some very nice hotels, Ritz-Carlton type stuff in these cities, brought her entire family, got a sleeping car, which is a much more expensive way to travel than just a seat on a train. Now, you know, I get it. It's a long trip, but it just looks pretty suspicious when you bring your whole family along and you spend the kind of money that she spent. Over $6,000 was spent, and it was approved before she went by the powers that be at the Albuquerque city government, which is really perplexing to me that they would approve these kinds of expenditures ahead of time. You know, as the head of a nonprofit, I can vouch and say that if I was to take my family on a trip, I would be very clear as to what expenditures were made on my behalf and the family's behalf, and separate those personal expenditures from the professional expenditures associated with whatever event and conference, et cetera. Taking a train, just because you take a different mode of transportation, doesn't mean that you can go crazy and spend all kinds of additional resources on that mode of transportation. Apparently the counselor says she's scared of flying, which that's fine, but you've got to take care of the taxpayer dollar as you would your own. And unfortunately, in this case, Councilor Pena really, I think, overstepped her, you know, the bounds, and the city also, by approving this ahead of time, really screwed up, for lack of a better word. And so this story is available on Channel 7's website. City Councilor's Trip with Family Cost Big Bucks is the title. The Albuquerque Journal just today had an editorial discussing this issue. And I, like I said, I was interviewed and appeared on camera. They held off on running this story. They had this information for a while and put this particular interview on right after the Academy Awards, the Oscars, a week or so ago. And because they really wanted to highlight this particular issue and the fact that they're out investigating, really finding not just kind of new stories, but really trying to do something that's going to impact city government and hopefully ultimately the way things operate in Albuquerque. And I think it was a well done report and something that is important that councilors and government officials of all stripes should be asked to manage their resources, the taxpayer resources, the way they would manage their own.
So let's talk a little bit about free college, Paul. It's kind of, we've got a couple minutes left. The governor was trying to put forth a bill that would help New Mexicans pay to go to college. Of course, we have the New Mexico Lottery, which pays a substantial portion of a lot of student tuition right now. How does that all dovetail? Is that bill going through?
The answer is we don't know yet. As of Thursday, you know, we'll see when the session ends. It is a priority of the governor's that has been slowed and amended. And I suspect that even between now, Monday, as we speak, and Thursday afternoon when the legislature is adjourned, we will see more changes made to that particular legislation. This is one of those bills, you know, we talk about the relative fiscal conservatives in the Senate. They're under a lot of pressure when a governor puts out priorities of their own party, and they want to be seen as good team players, but they also want to try to manage the financial resources of our state. And this is something that fits into that budget discussion. So there's a lot of moving parts here as to, do we get a budget? Do we have a special session? Is free college a part of that budget? Where does it all come down? Because there's different means of paying. We're already seeing free college evolving from what they call last dollar of you've gotten all your scholarships and then the state steps in and puts up money.